Welcome everyone to the Damage Report. I am Francesca. I don't even know who I am anymore. It's Thursday. There's too much news. I'm Francesca Fiorentini, you guys. See, you'd think my name would trip me up more, but it actually doesn't. It's just comically long. Welcome everyone. So excited to have you here, and also excited to bring in a name I'm not going to mess up, but Rebel HQ contributor Adrian Lawrence is here. Adrian.
Ah, thank you so much for having me. And your name isn't long. If it is, it's long and distinguished.
Exactly, absolutely. Do you say Leonardo DiCaprio wrong? No, you don't. Nobody does. And we're basically the same level of fame. And everyone must remember that. We have a lot to get into. We got some legal updates, obviously, with all of the Trump stooges, but interesting ones, very interesting ones. More people who are flipping, and good on them because they're saving their own behinds. A little bit of victory at the border, some AI updates, very interesting electoral AI updates. And then Ron DeSantis's donors are fleeing like rats on a sinking ship. And so what does that mean? It seems like he's turning his ire back onto his own state. And so I feel for every Floridian out there. But before we get into everything, everybody, you know what to do. You're liking the like button, you're sharing the stream right now, you're making sure people know what you get up to on a Thursday. You're sending in your super chats, you're sending in your comments. I will be reading them as we go. But with all that, Adrian, are you ready to get into this news day?
Absolutely, let's get this.
All right, let's begin with this little slice.
Did you direct anyone to move the boxes, Mr. President? Did you tell anyone to move the boxes?
I don't talk about anything. You know why? Because I'm allowed to do whatever I want. I come under the Presidential Records Act. I'm not telling you. You know, every time I talk to you, oh, I have a breaking story. You don't have any story. I come under the Presidential Records Act. I'm allowed to do everything I did.
Okay, so that is former President Donald Trump getting pretty pissed with right-wing commentator Hugh Hewitt on his show, simultaneously saying, I'm not gonna tell you, I'm not gonna tell you everything. And also, I can do whatever I want. Now, Adrian, I feel like from a legal perspective, and my God, the lawyers, the layers of lawyers who are rolling their eyes at all this, it's like, you just don't say anything. You don't. You stick with the first answer. The second answer of I can do whatever I want is a little bit of a tell that he moved those boxes.
Yeah, I think we know at this point that, you know, Donald Trump's lips moving, there's likely to be lies spewing. You know, you would really think that this individual would learn to be quiet after a certain amount of time, but because he has not actually faced consequences over the course of his life, he feels he can go out and say whatever he wants. But, you know, my heart goes out to his counsel, because it's like the man won't shut up. He just won't shut up.
Right. Now, he might have been a little extra pissed. You know, usually he takes these opportunities where he can get them, going on these shows that are gonna sort of give him little layups, make him look like a hero. Although that was a semi-tough question, did you move the boxes or not? But it turns out that maybe someone who had something to do with the cover up of the moving of the boxes has flipped on him. It seems that the office of Jack Smith has reached a deal with the head of IT at Mar-a-Lago. Now, usually the head of IT at Mar-a-Lago just sort of gives the same, you know, Russian and Chinese spies like different kinds of Wi-Fi passwords. And this time, however, it was different, obviously, I'm joking. In fact, a former attorney for the IT manager, Stanley Woodward, made the revelation in a court filing responding to the Justice Department's arguments that he had a potential conflict of interest because of his representation of another key figure in the Mar-a-Lago probe, Trump valet Walt Nauta. Walt is, of course, also indicted, being charged with the same thing that the former president is, but is not a former president, did not have those supposed privileges that Trump claims he had. But so Stanley's representing both of these people. And so it turns out that there was a little bit of info dropped in one of these court filings. In the case, the worker testified before a federal grand jury that in July returned an updated indictment against Trump. Nauta and another Mar-a-Lago employee, Carlos de Oliveira, accusing the man of conspiring to delete surveillance footage from the property. All three men have pleaded not guilty. The indictment alleges that de Oliveira, this is the IT manager, this is the property manager, told the IT director, who we don't have their name, identified in court papers as Trump employee 4, that the quote boss wanted surveillance footage deleted. The Justice Department does not allege that the footage was actually deleted. And in fact, security video alleged to show Nada moving boxes in and out of a storage room forms a critical accusation in the indictment. In other words, this Trump employee four was asked to delete this footage. It didn't get deleted, but it seems like we have now, in all of the filings and all of the digging and all of the different people who are being represented and all of the charges, we now know this was a request from Trump. And it might have flipped this IT director against Trump himself. Special counsel Jack Smith's team said in a court filing last month that the IT director had retracted a prior false testimony after being advised last summer of a potential conflict because of Woodward's representation of Nada. He then switched lawyers and provided new and incriminating information in the run up to the new or superseding indictment in July, prosecutors have said. Now, I'm Adrian, maybe you can help me make sense of this, but it seems like because he's not being charged in the same way that Trump and Nada are being charged, but he's being represented by their same attorney, he's not being protected in the same way, it seems. So I don't know, it seems like he gave false testimony when Woodward was his lawyer. Now it's like, wait a minute, there's a conflict of interest here and he needs to switch it up, and he did, and now he's being truthful and maybe even flipping. And maybe help me make sense of that.
No, you hit the nail on the head. The fact is there's a conflict of interest by having this attorney Woodward represent all three of them when their interests are different. The fact is that this IT director had incriminating information on Trump, and thus Woodward couldn't represent him fully because it's in his best interest to make a deal against Trump. Right. And that sounds like this is exactly what the gentleman is doing now that he has proper counsel. The thing that I want to point out about this IT director is that Jack Smith would probably be in a better position to either remove charges against the IT director or try to get him a very, very low level charge. Because the thing is even if you make a plea deal with the prosecutor, that does not guarantee that that's the punishment or amount of time you're gonna get. The right. prosecutor merely asked the judge to please give you a set amount of time as a penalty or punishment. And knowing that we have Judge Eileen Cannon, who is very Trump friendly, going against anybody who seems to be anti-Trump, you know, she could end up giving this IT director an incredible amount of time to send a message on behalf of Trump, and that's very scary.
Right, absolutely. And it doesn't seem like though, it's not clear what he's being charged with, if anything at all. He just has information. And so he better lawyer up, and he better lawyer up differently. Again, because you're exactly right, like their interests are different because of what he was asked to do. And it seems like didn't do it. He didn't actually delete the footage because the footage is available of boxes being moved. It's very, the drama plays on, y'all, very exciting. But there's more, of course, there was a lot more from that interview with Hugh Hewitt. Here's Trump on whether or not he would testify in this particular documents case.
So if you have to go to trial, will you testify in your own defense?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
You'll take the stand.
I look forward to. I'll testify.
Okay, if you do, and they ask you on the stand, did you order anyone to move boxes? How will you answer?
I'm not answering that question for you, but I'm totally covered under the law.
Again, stick the landing, dude. So that is Donald Trump saying he would testify in his defense in the stolen classified documents case. But he's learning, our former president. He's learning he shouldn't say everything to everyone. He's got some good counsel now. But he still can't help but say, but it was all legal, but I could do it anyway. And it's like, that's just such a biggest head. It was like, I'm not cheating on you, babe, but if I were, it would be okay. Like, what if I were? It's because you weren't loving me right. Like, just come on, all of the things. It's so obvious that he did ask to move the boxes. But Trump is very convinced that he would be a great witness in his defense. Here he is at the end of July on Truth Social, bleeding. We'll have fun on the stand with all of these people that say the presidential election wasn't rigged and stolen, the trial of the century. And again, I mean, this is something that you know, Cenk has said a million times, which is like, this could be the case where he can bring all of the supposed evidence that shows that the election was actually stolen from Donald Trump and handed to Biden. Where's the evidence? You know, but I guess, I don't know, maybe he's sitting on something we don't know about, Adrian.
No, he's sitting on a huge ego. That's what he's sitting on. Donald Trump, he's just out here saying whatever he wants to say. And the thing is that sometimes there's a potential for it to be used against you. But if I were a prosecutor, I probably wouldn't use very many of his public clips, in part because he'll say he's just playing up to the camera, that it's not something where he is speaking under oath. And so I wouldn't want to put myself in a position to try to hold him accountable for those statements. Right. But also, we have to bear in mind he has a right against incrimination under the Fifth Amendment. And I wouldn't be surprised if he decides to exercise that right at the end of the day. But then again, for his attorneys, I feel bad for them because that man may get on the stand and just act up right and left, which is something that is very much in his normal repertoire.
Well, I think your first guess is probably the best guess, right? That he's talking a big game now, but if he were on the stand, he would plead the fifth a million times over, and in depositions he has pled the fifth. But he of course thinks that's a weak thing to do, and only criminals and only the guilty do that. And yet he himself and his so-called co-conspirators have done that. We're gonna get to a trial that in Georgia that is beginning. But in terms of him testifying on his behalf, I feel like this clip from Bill Barr really captures why that would be a terrible idea. Take a look.
And what would happen if he got on the stand?
I think it would not come out very well for him.
Do you think it would hurt him?
Oh yes, yes.
Why do you think that?
Well, because I think he'd be subject to very skilled cross-examination, and I doubt he remembers all the different versions of events he's given over the last few years.
I mean, right, it's like when you subject like the Trump bluster to the court of law, you can't squirm out of it. You can't give multiple answers. You're going to be held accountable for the thing you just said 30 seconds ago. The thing that most media outlets won't do to you, the thing that of course your followers and fans won't do to you. In a court of law, that's gonna happen. We saw the Alex Jones trial. It's like finally the echo chamber is broken, and you're not just speaking into the void anymore of a bunch of sycophants. These are actual prosecutors and judges. Anyway, Adrian, any last thoughts?
I think it's gonna be interesting how this all plays out over the course of many months, especially given what's going on in Georgia and all of those defendants out there who probably will end up flipping too.
It's true, and you're right to remember Eileen Cannon, right? This could be sort of the most soft pedally of all of the crimes, which is like, it's fine. We don't need this one. We've got all the others, and they're more important in some ways. Although who knows who he sold these documents to. But let's check in with Georgia, because things are starting to get moving. Let's begin with this.
Why should Mr. Chesbrough have to deal with a jury who's going to sit there for weeks, if not months, and listen to all of this evidence related to Coffee County and Ms. Powell? He's never been there. He's never met Ms. Powell. He's never emailed, texted, or called her. He's never spoken with her directly or indirectly.
So yesterday was the first televised hearing, that's right, in the Georgia RICO case against Donald Trump and 18 of his co-conspirators, starting with Kenneth Chesbrough and Sidney Powell, former attorneys for Donald Trump, and those who have been charged with trying to overturn the 2020 election through the fake electors, the alternate slate of electors scheme. And there you heard Kenneth Chesbrough's attorney asking to be decoupled from Sidney Powell, which is sort of goes against RICO in general, but let's get into it. The Fulton County District Attorney's Office said it's planned a 4 months long trial with more than 150 witnesses. While defense attorneys for the two of the defendants, pro-Trump lawyers Kenneth Chesbrough and Sidney Powell, argue that their cases should be severed from the other defendants. And so you heard that they don't know each other, they've never heard of each other. Now here's the thing about RICO. Like RICO can be used to go after mobsters and gangsters and criminals. And it's like, just because me, like drug dealer, has not heard of Adrian Lawrence, drug dealer, doesn't mean we're not working for the same exact purpose and thing. It doesn't matter whether we know each other, we're facing the exact same music here. And so anyway, for expediency, well, I don't want to give it away, but what did the judge, Scott McAfee, how did he rule in this particular instance?
So based on what's been presented today, I'm not finding the severance from Mr. Chesbro or Powell is necessary to achieve a fair determination of the guilt or innocence for either defendant in this case. And so I'll deny Mr. Chesbro's motion to sever from Ms. Powell. I'll deny in part Ms. Powell's motion to sever from Mr. Chesbro. And the plan will be to enter a scheduling order for Ms. Powell mirroring that of Mr. Chesbro with the October 23rd date holding.
Ooh, the October 23rd date holding. Before I kick it to you, Adrian, just really quick. So his lawyer, Chesbro's lawyer, Manny Arora, argued his client was not involved in the conspiracy alleged by Fulton County prosecutors. That's the whole point of the trial. Anyway, framing Chesbro as a more rational actor than co-defendants, specifically Powell. Essentially, he said, from what I understand the public record, she was fired before this conspiracy actually even started up because she said something that was supposedly crazy and the Trump people got rid of her. So I'm not with her. That's what they're claiming. I'm not with her. Adrian, what do you make of this attempt?
It's something that's predictable, and we would assume as much from these defendants out here because they don't want to be thrown in the same pool of individuals. Because when it comes to a conspiracy, just because you may not have operated on the back end, the fact that you're a part of it means that you are still liable and a part of that conspiracy and interaction, unless you vocally said, hey, I'm out of this, I'm done, and you make every effort that's necessary to stop the harm that you have contributed or that is going on. And that did not happen here. And also, when we look at RICO cases, we're talking about this nexus of interwoven spider webs of many people being involved, even though they may not necessarily know exactly what everyone else was doing. And so it doesn't matter necessarily if he's never met Ms. Powell. The fact is, if the facts and the actions all combine them into one type of overarching goal, hey, it's their asses, whether they know each other or not.
Yeah. And I think something that the judge said was basically like, look, we've scheduled a 4-month trial for this. We're not going to schedule 4 months individual trials to enter in pretty much all of the same evidence. It's just going to take too long and it's a ridiculous waste of time. And y'all are not that important to do that. And that's also what not what racketeering is. So prosecutor Will Wooten argued again that this is a RICO case. And he said this, all of the evidence is admissible against all of the defendants. Anytime a person enters into a conspiracy, they're liable for all the acts of all their co-conspirators. Evidence against one is evidence against all. Exactly what Adrian just said. And so they're trying to worm out of this, they're trying to wiggle out of this, but that's not how these cases work. Other developments from this, skipping down to Fannie Willis, again, trying to get this October 23rd deadline, start date for the trial for all 19 defendants. The judge has already set the trial date for Chesbro on October 23rd after he made a speedy trial request under Georgia law. Willis responded with a motion that all 19 defendants should be tried at the same time. McAfee, the judge we just saw, didn't deny that motion, but he was dubious during the hearing and said, quote, it just seems unrealistic that we can handle all 19 defendants in 40 something days. They might go longer. I don't know what the rules are in this case. The Fulton County District Attorney Office, however, expects its case against the 19 defendants would take about 4 months. Prosecutors expect to call more than 150 witnesses. What's more, prosecutors said that the case would be the same whether it is against one or all 19. So again, they're trying to delay, you know, delay and delay and delay the attorneys for all of these co-conspirators. But instead, it's like, no, let's do it all in one fell swoop. It makes sense. Of course, the right politically thinks that it is somehow motivated by, you know, Fannie Willis being part of the deep state or whatever she is. But yeah, make it expedient. I think it's a terrible thing to draw this thing out. And it's like, yeah, with all the indictment was robust. But Adrian, are you excited for getting more footage from these hearings?
Oh, I'm incredibly excited. And the fact is that we have cases against Trump and his cohorts in Florida and New York and in Georgia. And the only place we're going to be able to watch and observe as this part of our democracy unfolds is in Georgia. So having this access is so incredibly important, not just for historians, but for the American people. I do, however, wonder about the judges and the prosecutors and defense attorneys, how they're going to handle being on camera, being seen by the rest of the world. I wouldn't be surprised if all of a sudden their Sephora accounts and points just go through the roof, because that's going to change a lot of the presentation and how people go about doing their business. The last thing I will note about this is that as much as we want to say speedy trial with the 4 months, yeah, right. There's a RICO case going on right now in Georgia and Atlanta there, and they are in 8 months of jury selection. Just the jury took 8 months. So the thought that they can even get this done, especially given the high profile nature and the complex nature, in a speedy trial 4 months, yeah, right.
We'll see. Yeah, the judge himself said it seems unrealistic. So that's good to know. Well, let's take our first break. There is much more after this. Don't go nowhere. Welcome back to the Damage Report. Francesca Fiorentini and Adrian Lawrence here with you. Before we continue, quick little plug on my part. If you like stand-up comedy and you like me a little bit, you'll want to see me in San Francisco on Tuesday, October 17th at 8 p.m. at The Punchline. Everybody get tickets. I'll be there co-headlining with my husband, Matt Lieb, who is also comedian, podcaster. He's an okay dude. So get tickets. You can search on Live Nation, search on my website, search on my Instagram, or just go to SF Punchline and get tickets. I hope to see you there, Dragon Squad. But let's get into this buffoonery. Here we go.
When we're talking about climate, you can't just pick and choose one part of the earth and go, oh my God, did you see the ice? There's less ice here. But then you find out there's more ice over here. They never tell you the measurements all around the globe. Mm-hmm. Okay? No one is saying that climate isn't changing. Mm-hmm. What we are saying is the business model is a monumental grift.
Your entire career, bro, is a monumental grift. And the fact that you tried to sputter off whatever the hell that was as actual climate analysis is incredibly evident to that point. Like, they don't tell you about the whole globe. No. I'm pretty sure 99% of climate scientists, 99.9%, a couple have been paid by fossil fuel industries, have been saying the entire globe is warming. And so, it is very fitting that Greg Gutfeld decided to go on that ridiculously stupid tirade this week, because this week the EU's Copernicus Climate Change Service and the World Meteorological Organization has found that this summer was the hottest ever recorded. That's right. WMO report, which includes Copernicus data as well as information from five other monitoring organizations around the world, Gutfeld, showed it was the hottest August on record by a large margin, according to the UN agency, both on land and in the global monthly averages for sea surface temperatures. You got land, you got sea, you got air, it's all hotter. But how come the ice, there's more ice over here? Maybe there's ice over there because it broke off from the other ice. You ding dong. UN General Secretary General Antonio Guterres did not mince words at this latest revelation. He said our planet has just endured a season of simmering, the hottest summer on record. Climate breakdown has begun. However, as like scary as that sounds, there's something we can do about it, which is stop. So he did say, we can still avoid the worst of climate chaos, but we don't have a moment to lose. So we need to switch to renewables. We need to keep it in the ground. We need absolutely to rein in the money that we hand to the fossil fuel industry. But there's a lot more. Before I get to you, Adrian, you gotta show, there's a little pushback there on the Fox 5, right? Most of them are quiet. Harold Ford Jr. has something to say. Can Gutfeld get behind this? Take a look.
The climate has changed for the worse over the last 20 years. Can we
Probably also changed for the better. In fact, if you want to look at the
data.
There's
not a place where there's more ice. I will just say that.
But let's put it this way. More people die from cold weather than warm weather. So if you're going to just use the ultimate variable, which is lifespan, you would be happy if the planet gets slightly warmer because that makes areas more livable for people. People don't live in frozen areas. They live in warm areas. Sometimes it gets too hot. They got to get out.
Yeah, Adrian, we can always build on the tundra. Just how is this person still taken seriously by, I mean, he doesn't even take himself seriously, but your thoughts?
It's really wild to me, the individuals who are able to collect a significant paycheck off of just promulgating these lies, and they're bald-faced lies. And the thing is when the camera's off, they don't believe them. They just go back to their 7-8 figure home and they're perfectly fine. Why so many other people out there actually believe these things and then they fail to take action. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what's gonna happen, where we're all gonna be in some kind of Mad Max Thunderdome and it's going to be nothing but incredibly nasty because mm-hmm. nobody wants to live the Burning Man experience, not even people who went to Burning Man.
Exactly, and also, he's just wrong. Like, he knows he's wrong. More people die of cold than hot. Like, you're so stupid. When the globe is warming, when there's climate chaos, the sea levels are rising. There are more hurricanes. There are more wildfires. More people will be dying because it is warmer. Even in the cold, that means it's warmer. Because the chaos, do you understand how the extremes? Do you understand the extremes? Do you understand polar opposites? You do it so well every single day, spouting your extremist views. You must understand political extremes, climate extremes. Eh? No, of course not. And as Adrian said, he's just not invested in that as a narrative. It's so cynical to me. Like Fox, they all know. They're all sitting there, they're all quiet. Because they all know climate change is real. They all know it's man-made. And they're all just hoping that they and their mansions can get to higher ground in time before the masses come knocking at their doors. Well, we won't let them. You will see TBD. No, but let's get into what the masses actually think. Because there is new polling out just in the wake of this, the hottest summer on record, that shows people are incredibly concerned about climate change, specifically about having to move from where they live. However, it breaks down when you come to party and political affiliation. Undoubtedly. So this is an Ipsos USA Today poll that found that 23% of those who were polled said they either strongly or somewhat agree with a statement that it will get more difficult to stay in the area where they live. That's huge. That's almost 25% of people were saying they might have to move. Of the 49% of people who said they had faced extreme weather in the past month, which is again, nearly 50% of people who were polled were like, I've had extreme weather. 76% of them were either somewhat concerned about climate change. Among people who didn't experience a recent extreme weather event, only 24% said they were very concerned. Sadly, when it comes to these events, we kind of have memories of gnats and we're like, so long as hurricane not hitting me currently, I am fine. That's how you get that 24% who are like, I'm only a little bit concerned. But on partisan lines, it is even more interesting. So 28% of Republicans believe climate change is mostly caused by human activity, compared to 82% for Democrats and 56% for independents. Now, it doesn't feel like enough of Republicans, but it is the majority of independents. It is the vast majority of Democrats, and 28% of Republicans, that's not that bad. I feel like 28% of Republicans are also like, you know, Donald Trump is completely innocent, or, you know, there's like, there's a corollary there I'm not quite getting, but you know what I'm saying. However, in this study is really important because it doesn't just show that we're screwed because we're never gonna agree. It's blue, it's red, it's whatever. In fact, Matthew Burgess, a professor for the Department of Environmental Studies at the University of Colorado, Boulder, he had this to say about the study and the polling. He said that the divide is most interesting, not between Democrats and Republicans collectively, it's between the hard right and everybody else in terms of climate change. He says, when you look at the polls, young Republicans, moderate Republicans, and independents are all very concerned about climate change. And that is something that we just, 56% of independents. So again, Adrian, we saw at the first Republican presidential debate, not a single candidate was willing to raise their hand to say that climate change was man-made. They all balked at it, they froze, they didn't know how to play it. And yet the majority of Republicans do believe that it is real, that it is man-made, and it should not be a partisan issue. And so we are being, just like everything else in this country, led by a vocal extremist minority. When actually Fox News would have an audience if they just admitted it was real and started talking about solutions.
And the thing is, you know that they could do that, and also they could spin it such that it would help their base and all the other propaganda that they're pushing. It's just, it's wild how we have really looked to undermine science. And also, I really think that this speaks to the entire movement that's been going on since the 80s in terms of truly ensuring that people stay really dumb. As we saw with Reagan getting rid of the free education that would go with schools. And also of all of the years in which people were moving toward being knowledgeable and informed. And now it's like, let's keep people dumb. Let's keep people following all the propaganda, the mis and disinformation. And let's make sure that they continue to serve capitalism and corporatism as opposed to making good decisions that will keep us all alive well into the future.
I mean, that's really what it is. That's why in some ways Fox News is not wrong. They always say this is a part, this is how, you know, AOC and the left pushes their Green New Deal agenda. And it's, you know, what is hidden in that statement is that it's an admission that our current economic model of endless growth and endless waste and endless consumption is actually at odds with surviving on this planet. And so what they're telling their audience and what they're telling all of us is that they know that. They know that corporate greed will have to be reined in order for us to survive. That doesn't, the problem is there's still money to be made. You can make money in solar and wind, right? But there is no market incentive yet. And so I hope, and we will see, the Biden administration builds on the Inflation Reduction Act and goes even farther and deeper. So let's switch to that right now. There has been a big announcement. President Joe Biden is making up maybe for some lost ground when it comes to combating climate change. Because on Wednesday, the administration announced that it would prohibit drilling in 13 million acres of pristine wilderness in the National Petroleum Reserve in Alaska and cancel all drilling leases in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Now, those leases were sort of let loose under the Trump administration. Not that many people actually bid on them, not major oil companies bid on them. But nevertheless, these are going to be now canceled. There are now new regulations, and they would ensure what the administration called maximum protections for nearly half of the petroleum reserve. But it would not stop the enormous $8 billion Willow oil drilling project in the same vicinity, which President Biden approved this year. So again, everything else, but the Willow Project stays, the last hurrah. Well, the last hurrah can also mean whether or not people live or die, not just in Alaska, but everywhere around the globe. Anyway, I digress. It is a huge, huge step forward. The Biden administration had promised some new protections in the Arctic when it approved that Willow project. But the policies announced Wednesday go significantly farther, canceling refuge leases and explicitly prohibiting new oil and gas leases in 10.6 million acres of petroleum reserve. In addition, an additional 2.4 million acres will be subject to strict safeguards, requiring the Bureau of Land Management to show that any development would result in minimal effects on wildlife. What's that wildlife? We got grizzly bears, polar bears, snowy owls, migratory birds, and herds of moose and caribou. Just all the cute ones, all the cute fuzzy ones, all the wintry ones. Yeah. Also, interestingly, speaking of climate change, you think that you might feel it bad where you are. In fact, the Arctic feels it even worse. So this is pretty stunning. The average temperatures in the Arctic are increasing about 4 times as fast as the rest of the globe. The area is often described as ground zero for climate change because of record-breaking heat, thawing permafrost, and glacier melt. So this is a step, this is huge. It will only hold so long as I believe either Biden or a Democratic president is there. But Adrian, what do you think of this sort of, you know, making good on some promises, but then also continuing with the Willow Project?
Exactly. And you know what? I can appreciate the steps that the Biden administration is taking, recognizing climate change is real and very much a problem. At the same time, it's not aggressive enough. And also, when you do these counterproductive measures, it makes you wonder, what are we really doing this for? Because at the end of the day, if we are truly trying to in some way maintain the thought that there will be a future and that future will have a future, we're going to have to get real about this. It shouldn't just be the European countries actually making the effort. It needs to be us. But of course, since we're the ones with all the arms everywhere and we like to bully and be big brother, it sucks.
Yeah. No, and you know, you've got, this is in the middle of, you know, the Saudi Arabia trying to pull back on its oil production, basically, like, you know, got the Biden administration wrapped around its finger. So, you know, this is in their minds, this short-term geopolitical aim to try and produce more oil. I understand that. There's, by the way, there's already leases in the Gulf Coast, off the Gulf Coast, for example, that are not being actually utilized by massive oil companies. So the idea we need the Willow Project to, like, you lost me on that, just on some sheer, like, do we need this oil or not? Let's put that aside here. I think the real thing is, when it's never a good time to transition. It's never a good time to transition off of fossil fuels unless you just do it. There's no way but through. You gotta, I mean, look, he pulled out of Afghanistan in 2 weeks. Come on now, let's do this. Cut the subsidies to these oil companies, dangle the carrot over here. You did it with the Inflation Reduction Act on certain measures, usually consumer-based measures. Do it for industry, pull their subsidies. Put the, dangle the carrot over to, you know, in renewables. You want these subsidies? You're gonna you have to outfit yourself for solar and wind. Sorry. Anyway, that's just, you know, what do I know? What do I know about governing? That's just me. I'm just a podcaster, you know, internet host. Anyway, let's move on. Let's take our second break. Let's take a little bit of a break. Take a breather. That was a lot. We'll be right back. Back on the Damage Report, back with you all, back with the Dragon Squad, back with Adrian Lawrence. Let's check in with Ronnie. Meatball Ron is going through a little bit of a crisis. Yes, another crisis, as his donors are fleeing his campaign like rats on a sinking ship. In fact, less than half of the 50 donors who gave at least $160,000 have basically vanished. A lot of them have abandoned him. Let's go into who these people are. So in recent weeks, some of his biggest past donors have come out publicly to say they're holding back on writing checks to the super PAC. That includes hotel and aerospace executive Robert Bigelow, and by far the biggest individual contributor to Never Back Down.
I feel like he's backing down.
And to the DeSantis reelection campaign. Last month, Bigelow told Reuters that he would not give further donations to the super PAC unless DeSantis adopted more moderate policies and, quote, until I see that he's able to generate more contributions on his own. So look, I'm the training wheels, okay, little one? I'm gonna help you get going, but you gotta start pedaling on your own here and also cool it with all the extremism. Very interesting that money would be allergic or have reservations about extremism. It's not always good for business. And that actually applies to his stances on abortion and another donor, Walter Buckley, who's a retired venture capitalist, was DeSantis's 10th biggest donor last year. So the governor's decision to sign one of the most restrictive abortion bans in the country had weakened his political standing. Buckley has given $6,600 to the campaign through the end of June, but nothing to Never Back Down. He has given far more, over $500,000, to support a DeSantis rival, former governor, New Jersey governor Chris Christie. Oh, interesting. I see what you're doing. You're playing them off each other. But there's more, guys. What about Ukraine? Other donors are mad at DeSantis' stance on Ukraine, namely his decision to describe the war as a, quote, territorial dispute. Businessman Chris Reyes, the fifth biggest donor to DeSantis' reelection campaign, privately criticized DeSantis' posture on the Ukraine-Russia conflict, according to a person familiar with his remarks. So too has Griffin, said a person briefed on his thinking. There is more. It is just like he's not he's trying to be all things to all people, and it turns out that's not actually what these donors want. And Adrian, I'm finding it kind of interesting that a lot of them are like, too extreme on abortion, don't love the 6-week ban, don't love your foreign policy stuff, and also like just kind of cool it, like cool it in general. So, and also you need to raise money on your own. You need to charm people, but we all know how difficult that is for this candidate.
Yeah, when it comes to Ron DeSantis, not only is he not charismatic, but he's not attractive in any way as a leader. The fact that he had picked that stupid ass fight with Disney and set his state back, and how he's been handling things, it's like he's decided to go full right. And the thing is that the right is not full right. And it's just like what he's doing is foolish. And so it's not surprising that he is now broke, so to speak, in terms of people not wanting to give him money. I really just wish he would go away and continue and finish out his time as the governor of Florida and stop trying to ignite this evangelical Christian agenda that the GOP doesn't subscribe to.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I think we get into this trap of saying that all Republicans are extremists. All of them love the war on woke, and all of them love, you know, the abortion bans. And I think sort of like climate change, I think a lot more Republicans believe that it's real and they want something done about it. And a lot more Republicans don't subscribe to these extremist anti-abortion bans. And I understand these are donors, but these are also people who have a fair amount of sway. And so it is at least there's someone tempering all of this, even though we probably disagree on 97% of everything else. Like beginning with the fact that millionaires and billionaires are allowed to give to super PACs in the first place. So they're starting with that one. But it might seem like DeSantis is kind of like getting the memo, and he may be refocusing on his own state in Florida. And interestingly, making some moves when it comes to local government. In fact, just this week, Ron DeSantis has appointed yet another member of Moms of Liberty to a position of power in the state of Florida. This time it's the co-founder of Moms of Liberty, Tina Desevich. She's gonna be on the Florida Commission of Ethics. For those of you who don't know, let's a little refresher. Moms of Liberty is basically like the Proud Boys for soccer moms. It's a controversial organization to Democrats and groups such as the Southern Poverty Law Center that labeled it as extremist for its opposition to student mask mandates during the pandemic and to lessons about race and sexual orientation in schools. But again, DeSantis is flanking himself with these psychos, okay? So last year, he was still a Republican presidential candidate. He appointed Esther Byrd, who is a Moms of Liberty member in Duval County, the wife of Republican Secretary of State Cord Byrd, to the Board of Education. Then he appointed another Moms of Liberty co-founder, Sarasota County School Board member Bridget Ziegler, to the board overseeing the Walt Disney Company's special district in Central Florida. Remember that play that is totally backfired on him? And again, if you need more evidence that Moms of Liberty, first of all, they openly associate with the Proud Boys. But here was I believe this was a conference from last year where Moms of Liberty co-founder Tiffany Justice stands with quoting Adolf Hitler in one of their pamphlets. Take a look.
There's always a reason why something happens, right?
Yes.
One of our moms in a newsletter posts Hitler. Woo! I stand with that mom.
I stand with that mom quoting Hitler. Like, no, don't stand with the mom who's quoting Hitler. Just, I mean, and they think that this is a win, Adrian. Like, they think it's like, no, but like it was used to show that Hitler, I don't even know what they think it was. But you don't quote Hitler whether or not you agree with the quote or not. Just don't quote Hitler. Don't quote Hitler. How about it? That's just a slogan of life. You know, floss, pay your taxes, don't quote Hitler. So that was Tiffany Justice. But what do you make of this, like elevating these Moms of Liberty members to these positions in Florida government?
I'm not surprised and I'm not shocked, because, you know, to be able to run this extremist kind of agenda, you're gonna need unfortunately, white women. You're gonna need them in positions and places into being visible so that they can rally other white women, as we've seen when it comes to the vote, in ending up pushing these agendas that hurt us all, that are conservative right wing agendas, that it's often white women who have that voting power that puts things over the edge. And so in order to continue to facilitate that, he's going to need to put white women in positions of prominence. So putting this woman in this position, it's no shocker at all. You would just hope that individuals out there would start to see the patterns, and also to see how having those individuals push these agendas ends up hurting the nation and everyone as a whole.
Mm-hmm. And like, to be clear, yes, white women, but also in Florida, Cuban women. Let's just keep it real.
They white, they checking that box too.
So. Oh, you know they're checking the box. Oh, yeah. Let's before we go, there's a small victory, a little bit of a victory on the US-Mexico border. Take a look.
Major decision in America's migrant crisis. A federal judge has ruled that Texas Governor Greg Abbott must remove a floating barrier from the Rio Grande for now, calling it a safety threat. The barrier, as you see there, a line of bright orange buoys stretching about 1,000 feet, is meant to deter immigration. But the judge says there is no evidence it has done that. This decision comes after a lawsuit from the Biden administration. In a statement, Governor Abbott says this: Texas is prepared to take this fight all the way to the US Supreme Court.
And it may go.
Yes, yes, the place where we decide voting rights and whether I can put razor wire on buoys in the Rio Grande River. Just like so ridiculous. And so at least there's a small win, and this did come on the back of the Biden administration taking Greg Abbott to court over the decision to put these buoys there. Now they have to be removed. Again, they have claimed lives. This is from earlier in August, but Mexico recovered two bodies from the Rio Grande, one found near a floating barrier that Texas has installed. So again, there were razor wire in between these things. And not only, this is in addition to the people who die having drowned trying to cross the Rio Grande. So there's a photo of them. You see that sort of razor wire in the middle. However, just a little bit more on this actual case. The Judge Ezra heard these arguments last month, during which the Justice Department focused on its claim that barriers violated federal law, but also on the buoy's role in fraying relations with Mexico, which has voiced concern with inhumane barriers and claimed that they reside in part on the country's territory. Yeah, that's incredibly important. And a little bit of clapback from Mexico, and specifically the governor of Tijuana. This is what that governor erected on the Mexico side of the US border, Mexico border.
Mexico has a Cold War era message for the United States and its border wall. The Mexican government has just put up a slab of the Berlin Wall in Tijuana, steps from the US-Mexico border. In text below the relic, Tijuana's mayor writes, quote, "May this be a lesson to build a society that knocks down walls and builds bridges."
There we go. Builds bridges and knocks down walls. If only, Adrian, but quite an FU to put a piece of the Berlin Wall there. Damn.
That is just absolutely absurd. I'm really, really happy that this ruling came into place. You know, they were seeking the emergency injunction in terms of ensuring that the barrier would be removed while the case goes through. And this judge made the right decision. I know this was a Reagan era judge. And I'd like to think that they're less inclined to put up with Texas's nonsense, unlike a Trump appointed judge. So seeing these results come through so swiftly, given the reports we've heard of people being hurt by the barriers, I think it's just such a wise move, especially because Texas should not be encroaching on the federal government's territory in terms of international relations and border protection.
Absolutely. And you know, Reagan was a lot of terrible things. In fact, most terrible things. But somehow when it came to immigration and asylum seeking, was to the left of this current Republican Party. And yet they'd never want to remember that part about Reagan or George Bush Sr. or anything like that, that there were more progressive policies back in those days, better worker programs to come safely into the country and be able to leave, and less death. I mean, that's effectively what those buoys are, is we want death. We want to be worse than the drug cartels. Interestingly, though, those buoys also faced another challenge, and that's going to be that was brought actually in July by a Texas canoe and kayaking company that was like, hey, what gives? We're trying to rent kayaks and canoes. And so, yeah, look, I mean, I want to live in a future, I don't know if I'll see it, but where the US-Mexico border is a place where people enjoy kayak. It could actually be a beautiful place. Instead, it is a place of where people who are forgotten, people are homeless, people are addicts, people are deported, people are left to die. Does it have to be that way? Anyway, that does it for this hour of the Damage Report. There is more in the aftermath. You know what it is, you know where it is, it's on YouTube. Thank you so much. More stories coming up after this, so hold on to your butts.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.